criticized the Pharisees for in his day. He said, look, you guys know the Bible from cover to cover, but you don't lift even your little finger to do what it says. And so in any event, a big thank you to you for jerking the chain of the body of Christ here with your book, Primal, A Quest for the Lost Soul of Christianity. A friend, get your copy. It's an $18 book. We're making it available to you today for your gift of $16 or more to Save America Ministries. It's a hardbound book. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Get it on our website, saveus.org. And could you please seriously consider becoming a partner with us? Because you can participate, see, in a very active way in getting out a message not only across this country but around the world. Five dedicated internet networks. People all over the world are listening to this program. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. Remember, the just shall live by faith. Faith that works.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by...
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line from Southern California, Dr. Garth Nicholson. And Dr. Nicholson held a professorial position at the MB Anderson Clinic in Houston, Texas, and of course was on the editorial board of a number of scientific journals, and has in the neighborhood of about 600 peer-reviewed articles in the literature, which is quite unparalleled. Very, very few people have very many peer-reviewed articles. He's a prolific writer. He's certainly known throughout the scientific world for his work. Of course, we're going to be talking to him today about his experiences as he began to delve into the Gulf War illness and chronic fatigue syndrome and the experiments that were done on the prisoners at the Huntsville prisons in Texas and, of course, what happened to he and his wife as a result of their effort to help people who have these terrible, terrible diseases, these terrible disabling diseases. And, of course, he's written a book which we carry called Project Daylily. Now, it's a faction book. It's written as fiction, but it's really based upon fact and the incredible experiences he and his wife had. Dr. Nicholson, thank you so very much for being with us this evening. Dr. Nicholson, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much for being with us as we begin to, of course, go into the background of the fascinating book you've written, Project Daylily. So, just for our listeners who may not know who you are, could you just give us a little rundown, fill in the blanks from what I said?
Well, I'm currently the president and chief scientific officer of the Institute for Molecular Medicine here in California. And this is a nonprofit research institution dedicated to discovering new diagnostic and therapeutic protocols for treatment of chronic illnesses. And we deal with a lot of different types of chronic illnesses. We work with autoimmune illnesses, for example, fatiguing illnesses, like you mentioned, Gulf War illness, and chronic fatigue syndrome are two of the most common fatiguing illnesses, but there are others as well. We also work with rheumatic diseases, things like rheumatoid arthritis and sarcoidosis and other rheumatic diseases. We work on cardiopulmonary problems, such as asthma, also cases of atypical pneumonia, and we also are involved in cardiovascular problems, such as vasculitis, coronary problems, all sorts of problems associated, as it turns out, with infections.
All right, fine. And of course, you actually, of course, have been working with a lot of people with neurological diseases, because there really was a very, very high incidence of so-called Lou Gehrig's disease with the veterans of the Gulf War, weren't they?
Yes, there were several times higher incidence than expected of Lou Gehrig's disease, or ALS, Gulf War veterans. Also, multiple sclerosis and other neurologic illnesses.
So, of course, there's been a conscious effort to convince both physicians and the public that Gulf War illness was really nothing more than post-traumatic stress. But as you begin looking into this, why you found, of course, a great deal more. We'll cover that when we get back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Garth Nicholson. And could you go ahead and just give us a little bit of the background of... certainly the background of the Gulf War illness for our listeners out there, and how this more or less overlaps this series of symptoms and signs of this physical illness, how this overlaps with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia, which affects really about 2 million people are said to have had chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, and then somewhere between about a third to a half of the veterans of the first Gulf War?
That's approximately a third of the veterans of the first Gulf War have come down with a variety of different problems. The most severe of those turn out to be illnesses that are essentially the same as chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia syndrome, except that they progress, and they can progress to a lethal form of the disease, which you don't often see in civilian cases of chronic fatigue syndrome, although it can happen, it has happened. These people die of premature deaths with the neurologic problems or cardiovascular problems or other problems, and they don't just have chronic fatigue. And we found out early on with the veterans coming back from the first Gulf War, that's just the time period when the Pentagon and the VA was trying to tell everybody that it was a psychological problem, post-traumatic stress disorder, and none of the signs and symptoms fit with that, or let's say the certain signs and symptoms didn't fit with post-traumatic stress disorder at all. They were medical signs and symptoms, and we found that they were due to chronic infections. And one of the chronic infections that we found, which is the story Project Daylily, is an infection that actually had been worked on by the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology for several years. The experts turns out, all in the Army or worked for the Army. And Army pathologists at the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology had been working on this infection. It turns out this is what at least 40% of the Gulf War veterans who came down sick had this particular infection.
Oh, now, weren't they working on it as sort of a biological warfare agent?
Well, that's what we think, because it was being tested in the prison system under the guise of a vaccine development program that was sponsored by either pharmaceutical companies or directly by the Army. And various prisoners were coming down sick and dying, and then the guards were getting sick. And we got involved because the guards and their family members came to us for assistance. As a matter of fact, just yesterday, one of these gals called us up on the telephone. Her husband was the assistant warden in the Walls Unit, which is a condemned prisoner unit in Huntsville, Texas, at one of the prisons.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Garth Nicholson. And Dr. Nicholson was talking about this chronic fatigue type of illness that seems to be related to a mycoplasma infection. He was mentioning that just recently why the wife of one of the wardens there at the Huntsville Clinic had called him. And pick up the story there.
Well, what happened was that the entire family had become sick because of these infections that were being tested in the prison system. Had passed to the prison guards and the administrators and the healthcare workers at the prisons, and they took the infections home and they passed to their family members. And And this one family was absolutely riddled with disease. In fact, the daughter was diagnosed with ALS at Baylor College of Medicine. But she didn't have real ALS or true ALS. She had an atypical form, which means that most of the diagnosis was presented as ALS, but there were some atypical aspects to it. And this really concerns the infection that she had. And when she found that she had this Mycoplasma fermentans that we also found in the Gulf War veterans, she was placed on antibiotics as quickly as possible, and eventually she recovered, and she went on to have two healthy children and lead a normal, healthy life, and she was given a life expectancy of 2 years when we met her. So these people have all kinds of different problems. It turns out this family, the husband retired, they went to Kansas, and now they're living in Oklahoma, and they're all recovered and doing quite well now. And we've seen this over and over again where people are denied proper care and treatment because to hide essentially the types of illnesses that they harbor. And in this particular case, we feel that they actually were exposed to a biologic weapon. And the reason for that is that when we started studying this one infection, this Mycoplasma fermentans, which is one of the infections that we found on the Gulf War veterans in more detail, we found that there were some unusual genes associated with it. And one of the genes happened to be from the HIV virus, the envelope gene. And this told us that there was something very peculiar going on because there's no reason why that particular gene would be associated with this bacterial infection. And then when we started studying this further, we found out that, well, one of the things that this infection does is it invades cells very quickly, and that may be the reason why this particular gene was inserted. But there were other genes as well, genes to improve the survivability of the organism, to make it more heat resistant and so on. And all these smack of weaponization. They just smack of modifying an existing pathogenic microorganism to make it more pathogenic and to make it more survivable out in the real world. And so it just, to us, it just smacked of a biologic weapon. And that's what we hypothesized was in play at this particular prison and in some of the veterans that came back from the first Gulf War. Now, unfortunately, in the second Gulf War, we also have veterans that are coming back, and the DoD is trying the same story all over again, that they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. I don't think that's the case. But epidemiological studies, both done in Kansas and done in the UK, support the notion that these infections are probably picked up in the vaccine. So you can see why they want to hide this fact from the American people, that these might be friendly fire casualties that we're seeing not only from the first Gulf War, where there are over 150,000 that are sick, but also now from the second Gulf War, that soldiers are coming back, veterans are presenting with some of these unusual signs and symptoms. So we have the problem, history is repeating itself all over again, and that is unfortunate because we thought that we'd put it behind us and that we'd buried our mistakes, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, of course, the thing is that when you began to look into this, that's when your whole life began to unravel. In other words, when you were simply, working there at the MB Anderson Clinic and doing your research, that was all well and good. But when you began looking into this possibility of a biological warfare agent, which of course is in violation of the various treaties that we passed, that have been signed and supposedly the law of our land, when you began looking into that, why then? Then, of course, you came under tremendous pressure. Would you like to get into that? Because that really is the subject of your book, Project Daylily. What happens to a scientist, when he begins to try to get to the bottom of a disease that is afflicting literally millions of people in America?
Well, literally, my whole life was turned upside down, and that of my wife's as well. I mean, they literally destroyed my career in Texas, and I was an endowed full professor. I held a very prestigious position, the David Bruton Chair in Cancer Research. I was a professor and chairman of a large department and had approximately 100 people working for me. And they, that is the administrators at the Texas Medical Center, went after me to the point where they hounded me so much that I just decided to leave because of the pressure and of the attempts on our lives. And this is covered really in the book. I had a superior of mine who was shot in the back of the head in his office. I've had two of my students that died under mysterious circumstances. It became a very unsafe place for us to work. And the book goes into that in detail and how we escaped many times. And so we, we decided that we were pressing our luck a little bit too much, that we needed to get out. And so we did. We left Texas and came to California, and we set up a nonprofit research institution to study these chronic illnesses that so many people are suffering from.
Well, now, actually, the superior, the gentleman that was shot in the back of the head, wasn't he a retired officer, either Air Force or military colonel or something? And he was, had told you within a few minutes before he was executed that he was going to come forward and talk about the things that you were delving into?
Yes, he was actually planning on blowing the whistle on the prison experiments because he didn't like it. He didn't believe in it. He thought it was wrong. And he thought it was totally unethical. They were also involved in some nursing home scandals where outside of San Antonio there were some rest homes or nursing homes which were, we hypothesize, acquired basically to test some of these organisms. So I didn't even know it at the time that my own institution was involved in some of these horrific experiments. And so this is one reason why they went after me and went after my wife. And so it was a real horror story for us, and we turned it into a medical thriller, which is really what it is, and finding the answers for people. That's a success of the story, and escaping and telling the tale is the other aspect of it, which is kind of interesting to a lot of readers.
Well, I think it's important to have the book out there because I think in some respects you're far better off to be a big target than a small target. And when people sort of forget about you, that's when your life is really in danger. It has happened to a number of the people that I've interviewed who have been very courageous and have, I believe, been killed for it. The last one was Gary Webb, who'd written a treatise on the CIA and drugs. He we're told he committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice.
Well, we've run into a number of things like that as well, and quite frankly, it's a very common technique to get somebody and either get them into an accident where they lose their lives or get them to so-called commit suicide. And in fact, some of my colleagues in Houston were down as suicides, and they weren't suicidal. We knew that. We knew what happened. We knew that they'd stumble across things and were very vocal about it, and so they presented a threat, and they were eliminated because of that. So we didn't want to find ourselves in that situation.
Chris, I think it's very difficult for the average American to believe that this could really happen in the United States. And where is the FBI? Where is our police agencies doing something about it? And I'm sure that we have many good police officers, but many times people in key positions are there for one and only one purpose, and that is to cover up and prevent an effective evaluation of what happened. Now, whatever happened to the gentleman you said he was shot in the head, I think twice, he was your superior. Wasn't he retired Army colonel or Air Force colonel?
Well, he was a retired Air Force colonel and a physician, and he was the vice president for patient care at the institution. And unfortunately, he knew a lot about the programs, the classified programs that were going on in the military. So he had a background already in the sort of thing that we were involved in. So he was very very kind to us, very supportive, and tried to help us whenever he could. I think what happened, he just overstepped the bounds, I guess, and it cost him his life.
And of course, but what about the investigation? You find somebody with two shots in the back of the head. Obviously this is a murder. What about the investigation of it?
Well, actually, he was shot six times in the back of the head.
Six times in the back of the head.
And back of the head and the shoulder in his office a few minutes after I had actually spoken to him early one morning. And the crime was never solved. And it was a professional hit because the person had gone in and escaped the institution and knew exactly where every security camera was located and knew exactly how to get in and out of the building and not be seen
by
anyone.
Who would know how to hire a professional killer? Other than people who were professional killers.
Well, we can speculate a lot. We think we know who did it. In fact, our hypothesis is actually presented in the book. And I won't tip my hat on that. I want people to get the book and read it because it goes into a lot more information than what we've just described on how these programs started and so on. We actually looked into this in much more detail, and we found that the microbe that we discovered in the veterans was actually probably a microbe that came back in Operation Paperclip after World War II, when the Nazi scientists were being brought back to the United States after being rounded up by the CIA, or then was the OSS and the Army after World War II. So it actually has its origin in Eastern Europe. They were testing these weapons in the death camps to see how effective they were, and we grabbed a lot of these scientists after World War II and brought them back and then tried to refine further these weapons because we knew the Russians were doing the same thing.
Yeah, because they were very, very effective weapons of killing human beings. They're biological weapons. We're not supposed to be experimenting with them. And yet, of course, as we'll probably mention later, there have been well over 100 biologists or microbiologists who've died under very mysterious circumstances in the last few years. Isn't that right?
Oh, yes. One of these, as a matter of fact, was coming to visit us who'd replicated some of our results on the genetic modifications in the mycoplasma fermentans. And he died under very suspicious circumstances on his way to our institution.
Well, the book is Project A. Lily. I've read it. I read the original draft of it, or one of the original drafts. And I'll tell you, it's a book that's difficult to put down. If you'd like to know more, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Garth Nicholson. We're talking about his book, Project A. Lily, and I was just saying, I have read the book, and I'll tell you what, it is a real thriller. Of course,
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work, it's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
You were going to be, I think, probably mentioned what they do to the mitochondria. This is the mycoplasm, which is associated with HIV. In other words, AIDS is not simply HIV infection, contrary to what most doctors and most people think. It is a combined infection. There's HIV, and most of the people have a mycoplasm. What percentage of people have the mycoplasm, do you think?
Well, it's at least 80%, according to the studies done by the Army. And it may even be higher because these infections are actually hard to detect. It can be detected, but it's really quite difficult because they hide inside our cells. And most tests are done with blood samples, and very little of these microbes get loose in the blood so we can detect them.
All right. Now, what about you were going to say? That I think you were going to talk about the mycoplasm. Was it hitting or attacking the mitochondria?
It does. The mitochondria are the little batteries inside our cells that provide the energy for all of our cellular functions. And there's some tissues, such as the tissues of the central nervous system, that require a lot of energy to operate. So, in fact, some of the nerve cells burn six times as much energy as other cells in the body. So they require these mitochondria inside the cells to be very active and produce a lot of high-energy substrates that the cell can use. And what happens is that the membrane of the mitochondria gets damaged by oxidation, by these molecules released from the mycoplasma, and it becomes leaky. And when it becomes leaky, it's just like stripping the insulation off a battery and then trying to put it in your flashlight. It won't work anymore because it's run down. The energy is escaped from the battery, and the same thing happens with our mitochondria. The potential across the membrane, the chemical potential, can't be maintained. And so it's just like shorting out your battery, and they can no longer produce the high-energy molecules. And so this is what we found out happens, although we found some products that can reverse that and help patients with chronic fatigue quite a bit.
Now, you'd mentioned before something called Propax. Is there any? How can people get that? And, of course, are there any other products? What about CoQ10, for instance?
Well, there are a lot of lipid products and cofactors of lipid metabolism and so on that help. We've just gone directly to products that replace the damaged lipids entirely. And so these are all dietary products like Propex or NT Factor. And people can find out about these by going on our website, the Institute for Molecular Medicine, which is www.immed.org. Just think of immediate.org, and you'll find your way to our site. They can also just do a Google search or a Yahoo search and find us right away. And if they look under various categories and look under fatigue and illnesses, for example, they'll find articles on how we've used these products to restore mitochondrial function and to help people with their fatigue. And we've done studies on people during aging, because you lose a lot of mitochondrial function just naturally during aging. We've done studies on people with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia syndrome. We've more recently done some studies with Gulf War veterans, and now we're just initiating a study with U.S. Navy SEALs in Afghanistan that are operating at a high altitude. All these individuals have problems with their mitochondria. Either they're being stressed and their mitochondria are run down because of that, or because they have infections and their mitochondria are being damaged. And so they need to repair the membranes of the mitochondria, and that's what this dietary product does. It supplies the undamaged, unoxidized lipids so they can be naturally replaced through our normal metabolism. And that's the neat thing about this product, because we're not talking about taking a drug which could have potential side effects. We're talking about taking something that's completely natural that your body needs anyway and ordinarily would get through food, except that normally lipids are oxidized during food. And this is mainly why food becomes rancid, because oxidation occurs and things like lipids and proteins are damaged, and they can't be used as easily as we think once they're damaged.
Now, how do you spell that? ProPac, is that P-A-C-K or P-A-C?
No, that's P-R-O-P-A-X.
Oh, P-R-O-P-A-X, okay.
ProPac. And there's a website, actually, www.propax.com. People can go on that and see some of the scientific studies that I've just mentioned.
All right, and is it taken by mouth, though? Is it in the form of pill or capsule?
No, it's a dietary supplement.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Dr. Garth Nicholson. We're talking about so many of the veterans of the first Gulf War, approximately a third of them, came back with a Gulf War illness, and many of these, of course, have chronic mycoplasma infections. Of course, the government did everything they could to conceal this. Dr. Nicholson has testified a number of times before Congress and very prestigious organizations. He's traveled. He was a visiting professor in Kuwait for a time, where many people have a great deal of illness following the first Gulf War. We'll be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Garth Nicholson, for talking about, of course, what they have found as they began looking into these fatiguing illnesses, as they began looking into the Gulf War illness. And, of course, there are many other diseases out there where we have multiple infections in the human body. One of the more interesting things that's increasingly become apparent, that so many people who have arterial disease and heart attacks have chronic infections as the basis for this. Oh, we think, oh, if we just take enough statin drugs and get our cholesterol down, that's going to be fine. But half of the people who have heart attacks have a normal cholesterol. So then what part do these chronic infections play in heart attacks? And are some of our younger people dying as a result of these chronic infections?
Well, we do know that. In fact, when the Gulf War veterans came back, there was an unusual number of heart attacks among this generally young group, average age less than 25, and that was totally unexpected. And one of the reasons this happened was that they had infections like Mycoplasma fermentans, which can cause what's known as a vasculitis, or an inflammation of the vascular system. And when this occurs, there are a lot of what are called pro-inflammatory molecules that are released into the circulation. These increase the clotting rate, and so little clots or thrombi form in the blood, and these lodge in the capillaries and a variety of different organs. And when this happens in the heart, it can cut off the blood flow to the heart and eventually lead to ischemic heart disease and a major heart attack. And this is exactly what happened with a lot of the veterans. We see a lot of people that have these infections that have abnormalities in blood clotting properties and the presence of these thrombi in their blood. And that's, again, due to the vasculitis or the invasion of the endothelial cells that line all of our blood circulation, all of the capillaries and all of the venules and so on and so forth in our body. So this can be a very dangerous situation if it gets out of control. And we've seen a lot of people, particularly elderly people, are very high risk, and also the very young. And the very young are very interesting. One of the things that we found from the Gulf War was that as these infections slowly spread to immediate family members, the adults were being diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia syndrome, but often the children had some very unusual learning disabilities and behavioral disabilities, and they were often getting diagnosed with autism or attention deficit disorder or some of the other autistic spectrum disorders. And at first we didn't really understand what was going on there, but we knew that these infections could penetrate into the central nervous system and cause problems. And in a developing brain, this is exactly what you don't want to have.
Hold that thought for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. to stand back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. Garth Nicholson. And we have a caller from Johnstown, New York. I'm going to ask him to hold on for just a couple of minutes because I want to develop this idea of what's happening to the children. Now, we know from many studies that have been done, certainly the Regal Committee report, Senator Regal investigated the Gulf War illness. He felt that about 70% of the wives of veterans were sick. The wife came down with the disease. According to the Rockefeller Committee report, which we actually carry as a report from the Veterans Administration, they said about 40% of the wives of ill veterans were ill. And now Dr. Nicholson is saying that many of the children of the ill veterans who came back from the first Gulf War, these children were reported with autism or learning disorders or things of that sort. So obviously this is a communicable disease, despite the fact that the CDC and the NIH and the Veterans Administration do not want the American people to know the truth. Would that be a fair statement?
I think that's a fair statement. There's been a lot of red herrings put out, particularly in these autistic spectrum disorders. And, of course, this is not the only factor that's involved. We know that there are other factors, for example, heavy metal exposure, chemical exposure, and so on. All of these illnesses that I've been discussing are usually quite complex and involve a number of different factors, not just the infection that we've been talking about. So it's one thing to fight the infection, but other things have to be done to these patients as well. If they have the heavy metal exposures, to remove them. If they have chemical exposures, they have to be treated in certain ways to remove those chemicals from their body and so on and so forth. So they're really quite complex diseases.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to our first guest, who is Daryl, who's calling from Johnstown, New York. Hi, Daryl. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I did. It's to my knowledge, in our brains, we have chemicals called endorphins, and they are they aid the antibodies in, you know, curing certain diseases, you know, attacking certain germs in our body, and they are released only to my knowledge, and I could be wrong, by emotions. And I wondered if there was any other stimulant towards endorphins that would get them to release to aid in helping cure certain problems.
Okay.
I have another question.
Well, okay. What part do endorphins? Do endorphins play anything in part in what we're talking about, Dr.
Well, I really don't understand the role that they play, as well as any of the other neurotransmitter compounds that could be involved in these various neurologic illnesses. These are very complex relationships between the body and the mind, and when you have an infection involved, this kind of throws some of these systems out of order, and you do see some unusual things that come out of it.
Now, I think, Daryl, that endorphins really control pain, and this is the thing. Certain exercise will release endorphins. When you release the endorphins, they're almost like an opioid controlling the pain. Now, did you have another question for Dr. Nicholson?
No, just an experience that I had. You were talking about the military and how they don't want to, you know, release certain information. I'm a two-tour Vietnam combat veteran, and in 1967, when I went into the service, and I was on my way over to Vietnam, what we had to do, because of the lack of dentistry within the Army and orthodontists and things like that, what they had us do was, you know, get in a group, and they gave us a very small toothbrush and a tube of toothpaste that was very high in fluoride and very abrasive. I believe they used a pumice. And we had to brush our teeth, you know, each tooth one at a time, with this substance, and I wondered if that, you know, destroyed a lot of our teeth by taking the enamel off the surface of our teeth.
I have no thoughts on that at all. Do you, Dr. Nicholson?
I really don't either, because I really don't have enough information to really comment on that.
Oh, I think Daryl...
Well, we all had to do it because there was a lack of dentistry within the service.
Okay, don't know anything about it, but thanks so much for calling. Let's go to Jeannie Soderman. Jeannie, did you have a question?
Well, Dr. Stan, I am on topic, and I did read Project Daylily, and Garth Nicholson, you're just a hero to me writing this book, and it's a researcher, but on page 524, that's something very interesting that you wrote, and it was regarding the Nevada Trust, and I'm going to give you a website, because the Lear family of William P. Lear Sr., who invented the Learjet car radio, you name it. He was especially brilliant. It's called NevadaScams.com. And there is a lawsuit against the trustees, the attorneys, the district judges, and the Supreme Court judges of Nevada for stealing money from the Lear Trust. And so there again, the website is NevadaScams, that's S-C-A-M-S.com. And there's two generations of the Lears that are putting lawsuits on this, and it will go to the United States Supreme Court. And you might be interested in that, Dr. Nicholson.
And, of course, for our listeners out there who haven't read the book, of course, there's talk about a Nevada trust, which, of course, belongs to Dr. Nicholson's wife. Anything else you wanted to say, Jeannie?
No, that's it. And thanks, Dr. Nicholson, for your courage and being such a great guy.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Jeannie.
Well, thanks very much. I mean, one of the aspects of the book is how do you finance all these programs and keep it secret? And one of the things that we stumbled across was the fact that trusts were being misused to support some of these programs, like the MKUltra program, for example, the Manhattan 2 program, which was the development of a variety of different biologic agents and vaccines against them and so on.
And so these were actually Nevada trusts, weren't they, and having to do with the gambling interest there in Las Vegas?
There were a number of different trusts. One was the Manhattan Trust, one was the Sterling Trust, one was the Sita Dharma Trust. All these were very large trusts that were supposed to be for humanitarian purposes, but they're being misused.
And, of course, there's a great deal of medical experimentation that is going on today. That is not for the betterment of mankind, I fear, but for the destruction of mankind. And that's a rather frightening concept, that scientists would actually engage in that sort of thing. But I'm sure that many times they are recruited into these programs. Would you have any comment on that? Because I've certainly looked at the information that's come out of these various reports of the Special Virus Cancer Project, which they were all supposed to be destroyed. The CIA project, all the records were going to be destroyed. They're not really very good. They didn't destroy them all, and we actually have some of those. I'm sure you've seen them as well. An awful lot of leading scientists were involved with the Central Intelligence Agency. Why would they do something like that?
Well, scientists are recruited all the time for various projects, and often they're given such a small piece, and they don't really understand the big picture, and they don't know how it fits in with other pieces, but they're offered contract money to pursue this line of research, and then they write up the reports and turn it back in, and often they never know what became of the research that they did, and often it's compiled and put together in some offices somewhere, in a covert way, and then that information is used. And so there are a number of different programs which have been going on. I mentioned the MKUltra program, but there are all sorts of different classified programs that were going on where certain aspects of research they would contract out to certain people. There were over 120 universities in the United States that were involved in these kinds of projects, so this is not something that was done in a little corner laboratory. This was done in all the major pharmaceutical companies, all the major universities, and so on, were heavily engaged, and they were all reaping the economic benefits from these programs.
And yet, of course, an awful lot of the scientists ended up very, very dead. And in fact, the last one I remember had been found stabbed half a dozen times and stuffed in the trunk of his car with somebody set on fire. Why would anybody do that to a microbiologist? I mean, what could a microbiologist know that was so dangerous? And as you begin to read the book Project Daylily, I think that you'll begin to get a picture of why they would want to eliminate people and why Dr. Nicholson left his tenured position at MD Anderson Clinic, a fascinating adventure story. The only trouble is, certainly there's an awful lot of truth in this story. Well, what sort of response have you gotten from the scientists and others who've read the story?
Well, I've actually gotten a lot of good response. I haven't gotten any negative response yet, but then again, they probably wouldn't tell me directly about it. But we have a lot of good feedback. In fact, we have a website for the book, and people can actually read the comments from some of the leading scientists in the world. There's a Nobel laureate, for example, and several department chairmen that have made comments on the book. So That's projectdaylily.com. It's run together as one word.
All right, fine. That's projectdaylily.com. And we have another caller. Let's see who it is. Who is calling?
Lorna.
Did you have a question for our guest?
Yes. As far as mercury exposure and that type of thing, I believe that my daughter flew her shots had some problems because she had what they call lazy tongue syndrome and started stuttering. And
now you're talking after her vaccination shots?
Yes. And I was wondering what his suggestion would be as far as detoxing children.
All right, you're talking about detoxifying children. Now, did she have any contact with anybody with a Gulf War illness? Was this just a direct something that followed after her immunizations?
I think it was directly after her immunizations.
All right. Do you have any thoughts at all on that, Dr. Nicholson?
Well, we see the parallel between what happened, for example, in the Gulf War experience, where the multiple military vaccines were studied and shown by epidemiologists to be directly related to Gulf War illness after the Gulf War. And this is studies done in the U.S. as well as in Great Britain. Now we see the parallels in children who are undergoing developmental change at an early age, and they're given all these multiple vaccines, and there's an alarming rate of autism and autistic spectrum disorders in these children. And is there a relationship between those and the multiple vaccines? I think there is. But one of the ways in which this is being studied is that they choose a particular vaccine or group of vaccines, and then they study the relationship between that vaccine and illness. And that's not the way you do this type of study. You've got to take all of the vaccines and study them all at once, unfortunately, because it's probably the multiple vaccines. The vaccines themselves can be very immune suppressing, and either contaminants in the vaccine or opportunistic infections that are in the environment can get in these children and take hold, and then there are other exposures as well, either heavy metals, some of which are present in the vaccines, or some chemical exposures in the environment, and all of this can combine to give these developmental and learning disorders that we see in these children.
Well, one of the things that's always bothered me is that certainly we know in the original polio vaccine that they gave all of us, there were all the monkey viruses, and that was in the rhesus monkey. One of those, of course, was a cancer-producing virus, SV40, so then they switched over to the green monkey, and we got all of the viruses from them. And then sometimes we have, you know, the vaccines that are grown in chicken eggs or embryos, and then we get all the chicken viruses. Are any of those viruses harmful to people, or do we have any way of knowing?
Well, there are studies, for example, that have followed, for example, you mentioned the SV40 virus, which is known to be a cancer-causing virus under certain conditions, so these viruses can contribute to pathogenic events. There's no doubt about it. And one of the other problems in the vaccines, one study that was done showed that 6% of them are contaminated, for example, with mycoplasma. So 6% doesn't sound like a large number, but when you are vaccinating thousands and thousands of children, all of a sudden the numbers become very realistic.
Well, Lorna, do you have any suggestions at all as far as Lorna? What could she do, or what should she do as far as her daughter is concerned?
Well, you know, the thing that we tell people that have these problems is that, number one, you have to get to an expert that study these so that you know exactly what you're dealing with. That's the first thing. The second thing is you've got to try and determine if they've been exposed to heavy metals, to chemicals, to some of these opportunistic infectious agents and so on. Once you have that information, then you can proceed on some kind of a treatment program for these children.
Well, I don't know that there's that many experts, and the cost involvement might be not possible for us right now to hire an expert in the
field. Well, this is a problem that we all face, and we'll have people coming to us all the time, and one of the first things that they tell us is that, you know, I'm broke. I've been to see 50 physicians. They can't figure out what's wrong with me. I've got this problem, that problem, whatever, and we try and help them. So if there are people out there that, you know, we'll try and help them. They can send an email, which is the best way to contact us, and we'll try and help them. We can't make referrals because we're a nonprofit institution, but we can point them in some general directions where they can get help.
How would it be the email address that people would send to?
Well, it's on our website for the Institute for Molecular Medicine, again, which is www.immed.com. media.org. Just remember media.org. Or they can look it up on Yahoo, for example. We do try and help people that have these problems.
And, of course, the first thing you have to do, Lorna, you have to make a diagnosis. You have to find out, I mean, really what the basis for it is. So why don't you send an address to Dr. Nicholson. Go ahead.
Okay, I also wanted to say, I don't know, have you ever heard of G.I. Guinea Pig, the book?
What's that?
It's called G.I. Guinea Pigs. It was a book about experiments and stuff they were doing on the World War II veterans.
Well, we've had misuse of military personnel ever since probably the Civil War for various medical experiments.
In the guinea pig, my dad, it was really funny because he was in the Veterans Hospital in California, and all of a sudden somebody had the book, and he's like, well, wait a second, that's me. And he was in a picture. He was decontaminating somebody from radiation and nuclear exposure with a whisk broom, sweeping them down.
I will tell you the tragedy is that they experiment on our men in the military. It's criminal activity, and yet those people have no comeback at all. This is well covered in the Rockefeller Committee report from the Veterans Administration, Mr. McCary. They use our military as guinea pigs. That's why I will not advise any young person to go into the military, because you lose your rights, and if they destroy your life or kill you experimenting on you, there's never any repercussions. It's one thing to be willing to die to protect your country. It's another thing to be used as a guinea pig without your consent or knowledge. Thank you so much for calling. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
All right, fine. And so our guest this evening is Dr. Garth Nicholson. His book is entitled Project Daylily. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. It's a fascinating adventure story. You couldn't make up anything this incredible, and yet, of course, it is based upon the true story of Dr. Nicholson and his wife, who stumbled on a mass series of experiments were carrying out on, of course, on prisoners at Huntsville and other prisons, and, of course, on our servicemen would appear in the Gulf War. And the great tragedy is, we're talking about several hundred thousand veterans of the first Gulf War are ill, and we know at least 25,000 of them died. A very successful experiment. Well, Dr. Nicholson, we've got about 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What was your thought you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, we've been talking about the book Project Daylily, and the more people...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about anything. any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dry Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com.
Again, program, try to get people to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men against truly wicked forces and, of course, ultimately for the survival of Christian civilization. There are people who would destroy Christian civilization, and there were people who would destroy the sovereignty of our United States, and many of them are working at the highest levels of our government today. Now, certainly if you'd like to get the book or Project Daylily or know more about it, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to begin to put a lot of this into its perspective, we do have a video, a talk I gave called Planned Population Reduction. That's Planned Population Reduction, and it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We actually have a four-tape set on the Gulf War illness. We have a four-tape set on population control. We have a video on population control. We've written the population control monograph where we simply quote the people who talk about the importance, the vital importance of eliminating 90% of the world's population. We take you to Elberton, Georgia, and the great stone monument there, the American counterpart of the British Stonehenge, which is a great occult monument where they have satanic ceremonies. And I've been there on several occasions, and there engraved in stone in eight different languages is the Ten Commandments that come from the pit of hell. And point one is maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. And people say nothing like that could happen. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I believe it can. I believe it's coming. I believe it's coming very, very rapidly. In fact, Barbara Mark Suppert, one of the wealthiest women in the world, wrote a book in the original manuscript, which we have copies of. She wrote about, her book was channeled to her by, I believe, a demonic spirit. She called it the Christ spirit. Told her that, you know, the Revelation 6:8, and look and behold a pale horse, and the rider upon him was death, and of course power was given unto them, and Hades followed close behind, and power was given to kill a quarter of the population of the world with by the sword, and by hunger, and by pestilence, and death. And then she went on to talk about how there were people that just wouldn't evolve to the higher levels. They were about a quarter of the world. They were going to have to be eliminated. And then she went on to say, that is not your job, my dear. That is ours, for we are the riders of the pale horse, death. A woman who ran for the vice presidency of the United States in 1984, Democratic nomination against Geraldine Ferraro. There really are people out there like Jacques Cousteau who talked about the necessity of eliminating 365,000 people a day. If you'd like to verify what we're saying, we'll send you the pages from the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our internet programs 5 hours a day. And then tell other people about our program. Pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so till we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, hopefully the next hour they're going to be the views of Stephen Meyer, who's written a wonderful book on the signature in the cell. The signature in the cell, and it goes certainly into the digital information that is actually in the molecules of our chromosomes, of our genes, and really, of course, an amazing, amazing organization that brings about the human body. And, of course, he's with the Discovery Institute. His book is Signature in the Cell, a DNA and the Evidence for Intelligent Design. Now, Stephen Meyer was a professor. Now he's working at the Discovery Institute trying to get out information on intelligent design. And most people really don't understand that basically intelligent design is simply not saying that there is a God. It's simply saying that there is a designer, that there is a perfect order to everything in society. And some people would call it God, but that is not the argument. They do not want to say that intelligent design suggests a creator. It only suggests that there is an intelligence behind what's going on today, because this could not have happened by accident. And of course, this is all an effort to actually get information out, to get people to realize, of course, that the Darwinian theory is simply a lie. Well, so far, we don't seem to have our regularly scheduled guests, so if you'd like to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. We'll be glad to talk about what you want to talk about, or if you'd like to talk about evolution, why, we'd be glad to talk to you. But, you know, the idea that everything just developed by accident. I mean, the heavens developed by accident. The earth developed by accident. The chemical makeup of our earth developed by accident. Music, the perfect order in music developed by accident, the perfect order in arithmetic developed by accident. I don't know how many of you remember when you were going to high school, seeing the periodic table, and it just lists all the various elements, and each one would have one more electron or one more proton or an electron and proton there, you know, in the nucleus. You had another electron, you could have another neutron, and basically how could this all just happen by accident? And of course, there's no way it could. I was just thinking how perfect, orderly even languages are. We have a number of different languages in the world, but they are all perfectly organized, and certainly with nouns and verbs, and although they're different, every language is organized. Did that just happen by accident? I don't believe so for one minute. There had to be a designer for everything going on in the world. Well, it doesn't look like we're going to have our guest, so give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. We'd love to hear from you. And this subject, how do you feel about evolution? How do you feel about design? Is there a signature in the cell? Is there something there that suggests that this couldn't have happened by accident? Or if you want to talk about the Obama health care plan, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly the subject this evening had to do with evolution. And our professor who was supposed to be with it, Dr. Stephen Meyer, it doesn't look like he's going to be here. So we're going to be just having open lines, and we would welcome your calls if you're out there and you have something you'd like to talk about. But you look at certainly everything about what's going on in the world today. You certainly look at the perfect order in the heavens and the way the planets and the solar systems and the galaxies and the universes actually certainly all interconnect. Are we to believe this thing just happened by accident? Are we to believe that music, the perfect order of music, the perfect order of arithmetic, of geometry and trigonometry, all of these things happen simply by accident? Let's go to Herman, who's on the line here. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Very good. This afternoon I heard a wonderful interview on Southwest Radio Church. They were interviewing a gentleman about genetically modified crops, and he was mentioning some research done in the Soviet Union using soy-based products and how, and the genetically modified things, how it was having horrible effect on their lab animals. And it just dawned on me that if we do go to the point where most of our food is derived from genetically modified crops, we literally could be facing the extinction of mankind, or most of mankind, because they said that the sperm in these animals was off by 60-70%, and many of them had other serious medical problems. And of course, mankind may be a little stronger than rats, but the point is there seems to be an organized plan, because when the head of the research there in Russia, who was paid to run this test, went to her superior, and she said, she was horrified at the results. She said, we have to let them know this is not working. And then he came back to her and said, no, we're stopping the project. And she said, who? why? And he told her, my superiors and their superiors are the ones that are controlling. When he was very distraught over it, he tried to comfort her, and he said, well, my dear, this is a way that we can control population.
And I think hold that thought. We'll be right back here in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Certainly we have Herman calling in. Our telephone number, there's going to be an open line hour, so our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Herman was talking about an interview we heard this afternoon on Southwest Radio Church, and certainly some of my favorite people are there. And certainly they were interviewing a man named Jeffrey Smith, who we've done a number of interviews with, and we have a 4-tape set on genetic engineering through Radio Liberty. But basically, Jeffrey Smith was telling a story about how over in the Soviet Union they were doing scientific studies, this woman that was doing scientific studies on, certainly on the use of. I'm going to ask my producer to pick up line six there, if he would, please. Somebody's calling in. Could be our, please, Herman, go ahead, pick up line six. But anyway, of course, they were actually checking what would happen with genetically modified soy. And of course, this woman, of course, found that the animals that had ate the genetically modified soy, the Monsanto soy, why they did not have any sperm. They certainly markedly reduced the sperm, and of course, it wasn't good for the animals at all in many ways. But the thing that surprised her the most was the marked decrease in the sperm count. And of course, she went to her superiors, and she wanted to get the information out. She was told she couldn't. And her superior told her, "My dear, you must understand what this is about. We are not going to let you get the information out because it has to do with population control." Now, we know here in the United States there have been a number of instances where of course, hog producers have actually use the genetically modified corn on their hogs, and the hogs became infertile. The male did not put any sperm out, and they simply lost their herds. There were no new little piglets. Could this be what this is all about? Well, let me tell you that there is a group that is setting aside seeds up above the Arctic Circle. Who is actually putting the seeds aside up above the Arctic Circle in the permafrost there, so they'll be able to have seeds when all of the seeds on Earth have been destroyed? Why Bill Gates, who's dedicated to population control? The Rockefeller Foundation, which is dedicated to population control? And Monsanto, who has genetically modified corn and soy and cotton seed and certainly canola, and they've done this, and they seem to be involved in this whole population control agenda. Also, the largest genetic manufacturing company over in Switzerland. They're all in this together. They're dedicated to population control, and they're turning out products that destroy fertility. Do you think this is happening by accident? Why, you better get involved. You better get the facts, and we'll have to get Jeffrey Hunt Smith on here very soon. Well, right now, I think we have on the line Dr. Stephen Meyer with the Discovery Institute. Are you there, Professor?
You bet. I'm here, Dr. Stan.
I'm so glad. I appreciate so much being with us. Fascinating book, Signature in the Cell, and I want you, of course, to go ahead and tell us about how you got involved in this whole idea of intelligent design, because, of course, you've raised an awful ruckus. An awful lot of people have lost their jobs simply for saying, well, maybe there was intelligent design, not saying there's a God at all, but there's some sort of an intelligence behind what we find, certainly the signature in the cell.
Yeah, absolutely. I got into this back in the mid-'80s. I was working as a young scientist in the oil industry. I was a geophysicist doing digital signal processing, an early form of information technology. I attended a conference that came to the city where I was working. The conference addressed the big questions at the intersection between science and philosophy, questions like the origin of the universe, the origin of life, the nature of human consciousness. And I got fascinated with the panel that was presenting on the origin of life, in part because the unanimous opinion of the scientists there was that there is no adequate undirected evolutionary explanation for the origin of life itself. Many people don't realize it, but Darwin never addressed this question. He attempted to explain how you get more complex forms of life from simpler pre-existing forms, but he never gave an account of how life, he never even addressed the question of how life first came to be, how those first simple forms of life first emerged from simpler non-living chemicals. And in 150 years since then, subsequent generations of scientists have been unable to do so as well. And what fascinated me was the reason that this problem has proven so intractable, especially in modern times, and that is that scientists have been unable to give an account of the origin of the information, the digital code that's stored in the DNA molecule and which runs the show in biology. So in the book, I call this the DNA enigma, the mystery of the origin of the information necessary to build the first life. And that question seized me, and almost 25 years later, I finally produced a book about the whole odyssey of discovery that I subsequently embarked upon.
Well, of course, I saw recently that wonderful, wonderful DVD by Ben Stein called Expelled, which just talked about what has happened to many of the scientists who dared to say, well, gee, maybe there is some sort of intelligent design. And I know there was a gentleman who actually had published one of your articles in the Smithsonian publication, and he got simply demoted, for daring to even allow your article to be read in a peer-reviewed article. And this has happened to so many people simply because they said, well, maybe we ought to at least look into this.
Well, you know, there's really only two options at the fundamental level. Either life is a result of mindless, undirected processes, or some kind of conscious intelligence played a role in the origin of life. It's a great and fascinating question. It goes all the way back to the ancient Greeks. And right now we're in a period of time when many in the scientific establishment have established a kind of iron grip on of orthodoxy on all questions of origins, and there's a just kind of an expectation that if you're a scientist, you're going to answer that question in the first of the two ways and affirm that a purely undirected process was responsible for everything. And yet, what we know from experience is that information, this distinctive feature of living systems, is also the distinctive product of intelligence. And that's the elephant in the room, if you will. And what happened at the Smithsonian's Journal was that Dr. Sternberg sent my paper out for peer review. It was reviewed, and three different scientists approved it. I had to make some revisions, which is customary. I did. Sternberg was satisfied with the revisions. He put it forward in the journal. And about a week later, the lid blew off. The Museum of Natural History, where he was working, as the paper just ignited a firestorm of controversy. He had his office taken away, he had his keys taken away, his access to scientific samples. He was transferred away from a friendly supervisor and placed with someone underneath. He was placed underneath someone who was known to be hostile to him. And then all kinds of terrible rumors were spread about him, about his stealing library books and various things, and that he was on the take from the Discovery Institute, my institute. All of this was false, and in the end, he was demoted. So it was a horrific experience for him. And the irony was that at the time, at least, he wasn't even an advocate of intelligent design. He was merely someone who had some skeptical doubts about Darwin and wanted to see the issue of intelligent design aired out in an appropriate scientific setting rather than the op-ed pages, as he put it. The Wall Street Journal, which wrote an article about his case, said that the irony was that that Sternberg wasn't even the ID heretic. The heretic was this guy Meyer out in Seattle.
And that, of course, is you.
That is, I'm afraid, it was I.
did you see the Ben Stein production? Expelled?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
What did you think of it?
Well, I thought they did a very good job of portraying the intolerance that now reigns in many parts of the scientific establishment.
And here's they say, well, you don't believe in science. I always like to say, yeah, sure, I believe in science, like the Piltdown Man. I really believe in the Piltdown Man. And the Nebraska Man, there is science. I mean, science is a search for truth, and science sometimes makes mistakes.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And this is one of the rhetorical moves that's made in this. If you question some part of evolutionary theory, then you're said to be questioning science itself. Well, I'm not questioning science. I'm using science to make the case for intelligent design. And in fact, that's really where my story picks up. After I got fascinated with this whole question of the DNA enigma, I began to wonder if there wasn't evidence for intelligent design. I encountered a scientist at that first conference named Charles Thaxton, who had written a book called The Mystery of Life's Origin, in which he had enumerated the many difficulties with these so-called chemical evolutionary theories, the theories that are attempting to explain the first life from simpler chemicals. And he, in an epilogue chapter with his two colleagues, proposed that the DNA, the information in DNA, might be pointing to an intelligent source for the simple reason that we know from experience that intelligent agents often produce information. And he thought maybe this was an indicator of such a thing. it was highly intuitive and made sense to a lot of people. And I began to wonder if it was possible to make a rigorous scientific argument for intelligent design based on the standard methods of scientific reasoning that scientists use when they are investigating these questions of origin. So when I got to Cambridge a year later, I began to study the works of Darwin. And I discovered that he had a very common sense scientific method that made that actually, ironically enough, underscored the conclusion of intelligent design. And his method was based on the idea that if you're trying to explain an event in the remote past, you should be looking for causes which are known to produce the effects in question. And the effect in question in this case is information. What's the cause that is known to produce it? It's intelligence. So by his own method of reasoning, his own principles of reasoning, I came to the conclusion that intelligent design could be developed as a rigorous scientific inference and explanation for this key fact of modern biology.
Well, I mean, how else can you explain the magnificence of, you know, just of a simple molecule, you know, that can actually produce proteins and of course, these turn off and all. We'll talk more about that when
you
get back.
I hear your music. I better stop.
Well, that's time to stop, and now it's time to start again.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work, it's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. 630-9796, or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
And it really goes into this whole idea of intelligent design. Now, certainly Stephen was just telling us that if you go to his website on intelligent design, they have some animations there to try to explain how this whole system works. But it is so incredible what happens in every single cell in our body. And certainly all sorts of evidence that there is direction of how this works, and I was simply asking, you know, how we know that this very complex a set of events is taking place in the individual cell. It's almost as if there's a master director who's telling the various genes what to produce, the DNA sequence, how to produce proteins, and those proteins are taking amino acids and putting them into molecules, which are the very substance of life. So how do we know how this works?
Well, one of the things that I discuss in the book in the early chapters is I actually tell the story of how Watson and Crick first elucidated the structure of DNA, and then in the subsequent chapters how the rest of the scientific community, the leading biologists in the 1960s and 70s, were able to discern exactly what DNA is doing and how it is directing the construction of all these proteins and protein machines. Some of it was done with technologies like X-ray crystallography. Today we're able to actually image with electron microscopes some of the fascinating structures of the molecular machines that are at work. My colleague Michael Behe at Lehigh University, who wrote the now famous book, Darwin's Black Box, which is describing many of these molecular machines, has described how, not only how they work, but he's explained why they're not readily explained by a gradual Darwinian mechanism, but there are actually some fascinating images that are now available. Scientists have been able to actually see in pretty clear relief the structure of, for example, this bacterial flagellar motor that Behe has made famous. So there's a variety of techniques that are being used and have been used to unlock the mystery of the inner workings of the cell. The deeper mystery that my book addresses, though, is the origin of for example, that digital code that is running the show. First line of my book is that when Watson and Crick elucidated the structure of DNA, they solved one mystery, but they created another. The mystery they solved was the mystery of the location of hereditary information, but the mystery that has remained with us right up to the present is the mystery of the origin of that information, and that's where I think intelligent design comes in and where it can help explain that mystery in to some significant degree.
Well, you know, it is so really incomprehensible. I mean, we live in a body made up of individual cells. I don't know how many cells, maybe a trillion of them. And each one of them has all of these this vast mechanism within inside of it. But it all has to be directed almost as with a computer so that everything works for the common good. Would that be a fair analysis?
Yeah, that's very well stated. And you have the cells have to communicate with each other. Within the cell, there's all kinds of communication and control in the engineering sense of the word. Might be helpful just to sketch the basic form of the argument that I make, and then we can elaborate on that a little bit. But as I mentioned, I was trying to determine whether or not a really rigorous scientific case could be made for this idea of intelligent design. And What I came to was that it could, and the reason for that is that there is only one known cause of what we call specified complexity or information. If you look at a hieroglyphic inscription, or if you look at a section of text in a book, or a headline in a newspaper, or a section of computer code, and you trace that information in any one of those cases back to its source, you always come to an intelligence, not a mind, not a material process. So the discovery that DNA stores information in the form of a four-chemical digital code is a striking discovery and one which points decisively back to an intelligent cause. If there's only one known cause of a given effect, when you find that effect, you can infer the cause. And I think that's what we're looking at, a decisive indicator of prior intelligence. That's information.
But, of course, the people on the other side hate this thought because it suggests that there might be some force or spiritual force behind this. And, of course, the advocates of spiritual design, upon intelligent design, are not saying, there's a God at all. They're just saying that there has to be a designer behind what's going on because there's, or at least there has to be an intelligence because this could never have happened simply by happenstance. And I love that interview with Stephen Dawkins over at Cambridge, when he's asked, where life came from. Well, it maybe have come from another galaxy, but he never asked whether life came from on the other galaxy.
Well, right, and
hold that thought for just a moment.
Yeah, you bet.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest, of course, is Stephen Meyer, and of course, we're talking about this idea of intelligent design. And suddenly, I was commenting on this wonderful interview with Stephen Dawkins, and he's a professor, I believe, it's at Cambridge, isn't he?
There's two guys over there. One is Stephen Hawking. He's the Cambridge physicist, and I think you're talking about Richard Dawkins, the Oxford biologist who was then expelled and who floated this idea when Ben Stein was pressing him. And he admitted to Ben Stein that no one knows how life first began. There's no evolutionary explanation for it. But then he posited, he said, well, it could be that there's a signature of intelligence. And, of course, I perked up because that was the title of the book I was working on at the moment. And he said that, but then he posited, he said, if there is such an intelligence, it must have itself evolved from chemical processes someplace out in space. But you can't get life to arise, you can't get the information you need for life here. There's no reason to think that it would magically happen in space. So he just kind of pushed the question off into the distance, I think.
Well, it was really a very, very significant interview. I think that Ben Stein did a wonderful job there, just showing the total intolerance of so many people within science for another idea that simply challenges the idea that everything happened by accident.
Well, it also showed Dawkins's atheistic presuppositions. I call it the ABG option. He's going to invoke a space alien, and ABG stands for anything but God.
Well, anyway, I thought it was fascinating, but I think your book is fascinating as well. And so basically, I mean, there's so much knowledge about the working of the cell now, and as you point out, certainly many of these ideas we use in industry today, but nobody would suggest that they just evolved. Somebody had to lay out the pattern for them. These are going to be utilized in industry.
Well, you see, that's one of the key points in the book. We're not inferring intelligent design because we can't figure out how evolution did it, how some undirected process did it. As it happens, there is no undirected process of which we know that is capable of producing digital code, information in that rigorous sense.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Stephen Meyer, and we're talking about his book, The Signature in the Cell. And before I do go on, so I don't forget, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get your website, how they can get copies of your book.
You bet. The book's available through all the major bookstores, Barnes & Noble's, Borders, those kinds of places. If it's not in your local store, you can order it. It's in their systems. It's available on Amazon and the other online book distributors. And you can get information about the book at the book's website, signatureinthecell.com. And that's where you can find that animation that I mentioned before, signatureinthecell.com.
All right, fine. Well, basically, of course, when we talk about this, this very, very sophisticated, this code, basically, of course, could you explain to our listeners what you mean by this digital code within the makeup of the DNA?
Yeah, you bet. It goes back to Francis Crick, who was the great genius that worked with Watson in discovering the structure of the DNA molecule, and that discovery was made in 1953. But 4 years later, in 1957, Crick proposed what I think is the most bold and audacious conjecture in the history of biology. He proposed that four chemicals that run down the interior of the spine of the double helix are functioning like alphabetic characters in a written language or digital characters in the machine code. Instead of having zeros and ones or the English alphabet, though, there are four characters, four chemicals, and the chemists represent them with the letters A, C, G, and T, because they actually function like letters in a sentence. And it's a four-letter alphabet rather than a 26 or a two-character code like we have with software. But the arrangement of those chemicals along the spine of the DNA will direct the production of very different sequences of amino acids, resulting in very different proteins, or sometimes not proteins at all. So it's the sequential arrangement of the characters that determines, of the chemical characters, that determines the kind of protein that is produced. And that we call that property sequence specificity, and that is or specify complexity. And the idea there is that the sequential arrangement of the characters determines the function of the molecule as a whole. Just like if you're playing Scrabble, you want the letters to be arranged in a certain way in order to get your triple word score, to spell a meaningful word as opposed to gibberish. The sequential arrangement, the sequence matters. And that's what you have in the DNA. You've got a series of chemicals that function as characters where the sequence is key to the function that the molecule performs.
Now, is the DNA one molecule? Is the double helix the construction of one molecule? Because this takes back a long way. In fact, I'm not even sure they taught this when I went to college. Certainly we know that the chromosome was made up of genes, as I remember.
Yeah, the genes are sections of DNA, and the DNA is what the chromosomes are made of. So they're... And then one of the fascinating things is that inside the cell, the DNA can spool and into very tight, compact, densely packed systems of information storage. There's a system called nucleosome spooling where the DNA wraps beautifully around these protein molecules that function just like spools. And so as a result, the information storage density of the cell, of the DNA molecule, is just extraordinary, and many, many orders of magnitude more compactly, the information is more compacted by many orders of magnitude than we have in even our most advanced superchips. So it's not just the information that's on DNA, it's how the information is stored, how it's processed, how it's expressed. It's a fascinating system.
And you say there are basically four elements there that actually determine and lay out the pattern of knowledge.
Right, but you'll have many, many, many of those four chemical characters repeating in a long sequence, just as you may have only zero and one in the computer code, but you'll have a long stretch of zeros and ones in order to spell out any particular application in the computer. Bill Gates actually has made an interesting observation. He says that DNA is like a computer program, but much more complex than any we've ever written. And that, again, underscores the main argument of my book. We know from experience that programs come from programmers. And so the discovery of something that is functioning just like a program inside life points to a master programmer for the living system.
Well, you know, I'm constantly amazed. You know, I look back when I was in college, what's 60 years ago, and there's said we had no knowledge of any of these things. It's amazing how knowledge has just increased phenomenally over the last 60 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And in my book, I recount a number of the key discoveries from the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. But then I bring it up to date in the final chapters and show how the things we're learning since the publication of the Human Genome Project, and especially since 2007 with the publication of something called the ENCODE project, which has shown that even the sections of DNA that were previously thought to be so-called junk are performing very important functions, and that overall this junk DNA is performing the function of an operating system in a computer, which tells the other information when to turn on, when to turn off, where to be expressed, and so forth. So it's regulating the expression of the other information. And this was actually a key prediction that advocates of the theory of intelligent design made beginning in the 1990s, that the so-called junk DNA would not be the result, would not really be junk as the Darwinists were expecting, but instead would perform important functions. And so that illustrates how the theory of intelligent design can actually guide science to new discoveries and make important predictions that can be tested in the laboratory.
And, of course, one of the exciting things is the fact that actually a certain drugs can have an impact, or molecules based the foundation of the drug can have an influence on really turning this whole mechanism off and on. And literally, of course, in the thousands and thousands of chemical reactions, they can just modify the whole chemical reaction, can't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It's regulatory systems are at work. Engineers in your audience will understand what I mean. That you have these if-then subroutines that are at work in the genome, where they get environmental, there's an environmental cue or trigger that affects the organism or the cell, which will cause, through various chains of reactions, certain parts of the genome to be expressed and other parts to be repressed or suppressed. So it's you've got regulation and control of the genetic information as well. So it's there's an error correction device that's at work within the DNA that ensures the fidelity of replication of the information. I've got a kind of a funny story. We had a very senior and expert software developer who was working closely with our molecular biologist for a few years, and he came into my office and said he said something I'll never forget. He said that, I get an eerie feeling that someone else figured this out before us. I said, what do you mean? Well, he tossed a book on my desk called Design Patterns, and it's a standard a manual for software designers. And he said, a design pattern is a term of art in computer science for a design strategy or design logic. And what I'm finding in the cell, as I'm talking to the molecular biologist, is the cell is using all the same design strategies that we use in modern digital computers, except that it's using an 8.0, 9.0, 10.0 version. He started talking Microsoft talk, and that's when he said it gives him an eerie feeling that somebody else figured this out for us, except that somebody else was quite a superior software designer because he was using such an elegant design, the very ones we're finding inside the cell.
Well, what sort of response are you getting from scientists? You know, are scientists afraid to actually embrace this? I mean, the whole theory of science was academic freedom. Why, we should have the right to explore, to challenge. I mean, certainly scientific truth today can become, you know, certainly proven to be wrong in a different theory. This was the whole idea. Darwinism was the theory of evolution. And certainly the theory of intelligent design. This is a theory, but certainly everything points to the fact that it's really quite accurate. What is happening today, especially, is there have been any reaction within academia to
Bernstein? Well, I think there's been two phases of this. I mean, the initial reception, and maybe even three, I think, you know, I would say the early 90s through about 2004, the interest in intelligent design kind of just continued to build and build and build. And then in 2004 and 2005, with the controversy at the Smithsonian and the trial in Dover, Pennsylvania, there was a tremendous media backlash against the theory. And I think there was a, whether unwittingly or not, there was a portrayal of intelligent design as kind of backwards fundamentalism. Dover was portrayed as a replay of the Scopes trial, where the intelligent design people were the drooling, white-shoed Bible thumpers who knew no science. And so we had a period of a pretty rough treatment in the media, and a lot of stereotypes and stigmas were kind of associated with intelligent design. And I think, oddly, you know, with the Expelled movie and now with some of the new books that are coming out, I think we're back on the offensive. And I've been very pleased in the reception to my book so far. On Amazon today, a very prominent British surgeon scientist posted a very favorable review, and he's one of the he's a fellow of the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons in Great Britain, one of the leading geneticists in Britain, endorsed my book, a member of the National Academy of Sciences here in the States. So I think there's more openness to this, and I think this information argument really resonates with people. We live in a high-tech information age. People understand the utility and the importance of information, and the discovery that we've got digital code in cells, that we have all these sophisticated information processing systems that work inside living systems, and that we recognize those design patterns, that logic from our own information technology, I think is turning the light bulb on for a lot of people, and that was really one of the things I was attempting to do in this book.
Well, you know, it takes an awful lot of faith to think that this could possibly have happened simply by accident. There had to be some intelligence out there that put this all together. And certainly we see this throughout every aspect of living organisms, and you know, from the simplest bacterium all the way up to the complexity of man. When you look at a human body, you know, and you look at the what the white cells do and the various types of white cells and the immune response, and everything is in perfect balance.
It's
but of
extraordinary.
Course,
you're right, Doctor. And the interesting thing is that I often say that the people that get the argument for intelligent design first are engineers, software designers, and medical doctors. Interestingly, there was a poll a few years ago of U.S. medical doctors, and over 60% expressed skepticism about neo-Darwinian evolution. And it's not hard to see why, because they're working with an exquisitely designed system, and that being the human body. And my book, of course, is looking really only at a much simpler, more tractable question, which is the origin of the very first living cell. But it turns out that at that level, at what's supposedly simple is immensely complex, and complex in an integrated way, not just messy complex, but a kind of complexity that is functional, that displays coordination of different parts, and most fascinatingly, a complexity that is produced because of a prior complexity in the form of the information that is conveying the instructions for building all those complex machines.
Well, I think the most interesting thing is, of course, the viciousness of the attack, and certainly rather than discussing the issue, which is intelligent design, then, of course, they want to bring in all the religious aspects and condemn people for believing in the Bible. But that is not the issue you're making at all. You're talking about intelligent design having nothing to do with religion as such. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, I think that the theory is based on scientific evidence and standard methods of scientific reasoning. I discussed that earlier when I showed how I had come to the conclusion of intelligent design actually using Darwin's own method of scientific reasoning, which is a little ironic, but there you have it. But I would also say that the theory does have larger philosophical and worldview implications, and that those implications are friendly to theistic belief. Obviously, if there is an intelligence responsible for life, one possible candidate for that intelligence is God. Another possibility, as some scientists have proposed, is perhaps some kind of intelligence that is within the cosmos, the space alien hypothesis. I myself prefer the God hypothesis because it not only doesn't beg the question about where that space alien came from, but it you have other evidence of design besides the evidence that we're finding in biology. In physics, physicists have been talking about the fine-tuning of the laws and constants of physics since the 1960s, and there's any number of dozens of parameters now that are known to be just right to allow for the possibility of life, the numerical strength of the expansion rate of the universe, or the gravitational force constant, or electromagnetism, or all these different physical parameters that are just right. And many physicists have seen that as very compelling evidence of intelligent design, and the interesting thing there is that evidence is located in the very fabric of the universe as a whole. It's not something that some creature within the universe could account for. So I think when you look at the evidence from biology as well as the evidence of physics, I personally think that the evidence points to a transcendent form of intelligence, and I think that does give some aid and comfort to traditional theists.
But, of course, the people on the other side, and I think you put it best when you said that ABG, the whole anything but God theory, which basically is what the people on the other side oppose, and the reasons they get so really furious, and the reasons they try to demonize and destroy anyone who talks about intelligent design is because, I believe many of them have a real intense hatred of this concept that there might be a God out there.
And well, you know, I think there's an interesting religious dimension to the debate, but people typically want to say it's the intelligent design people who are religiously motivated. I think the shoe is actually on the other foot. And you see that in the kind of response that Richard Dawkins gave to Ben Stein. My sometimes debating partner and a very fair-minded Darwinian opposite number, Michael Ruse, has written an important book in which he's very explicit about the role that Darwinism has played for many intellectuals. He says it's functioned as a secular religion. And when people have their religious beliefs questioned, they oftentimes become very emotional and sometimes irrational. And I think this use of power to try to shut down the debate by shutting off people's websites or demoting them or denying them tenure, I think that is essentially religiously motivated, but the religion in question is not traditional Judaism or Christianity or some other theistic faith. Instead, it's the what you might call the worldview of scientific materialism, Darwinism functioning as a comprehensive worldview or secular religion. And I think many scientists have overlooked the role of their own religious devotion in their reaction to the challenge to Darwinian theory or other branches of evolutionary theory, as my book is challenging chemical evolution, for example.
Well, I think the important thing is science. The purpose of science would be the search for truth.
There you go.
And that's what it should be all about.
We couldn't agree with you more. What a concept, huh?
We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest this evening, Stephen Meyer, his book, Signature in the Cell.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
God created these things, but purely from a scientific point of view, and this is the whole thrust of the book, we're talking about intelligent design, and so that these people cannot be attacked for being, why, believing in the Bible, why that some scientists would attack that. But you must understand there is a conspiracy against God. That is why anybody who even dares to talk about intelligent design will be demonized and will be attacked. And yet, of course, I mean, all we have to do is simply look at the marvelous creations, whether they be in the heavens or whether they be in the smallest cell. It just didn't happen by accident. Well, of course, we carry a book called A Tornado in a Junkyard, certainly by, an excellent book by a man named Perlow, personal friend of ours. If you haven't read it, it's well worthwhile reading. A Tornado in the Junkyard, going into the background of evolution. Now, it doesn't get an intelligent design, but this Dr. Meyer's book is excellent. We haven't decided whether we're going to be able to carry it or not, but it is well worthwhile reading. But understand that there is a design to everything. We did not evolve from lower animals, and the reason that this is taught in school today is to destroy the faith of our children, because they want to turn them against God. That's why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools, because they knew if they could destroy the religious beliefs of our people, they could destroy the freedom of our nation, and they could end up with a hedonistic society as we have today, with a society that's the largest exporter of pornography anywhere in the world, an area where Sydney is 25% of the white, almost 40% of the white births now are born out of wedlock. I think 75% of the black children are born out of wedlock. They've destroyed the moral fabric of our society, and they did it intentionally, because they want to use America, our military and financial power, to bring about this one-world Luciferian movement and one-world Luciferian government. There really are people who worship Lucifer. You need to study Gnosticism. You need to start with my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get our pamphlet on, there are the three pamphlets set, The Occult Hierarchy. It goes into who really rules the world. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret, my talk on the Financial Armageddon. There's syllabuses that goes with both of those talks. So you can understand what's really going on today. And you can verify this. You can find the emblems on the back of the dollar bill. You can find George W. Bush giving their code words and their code phrases in both his first and his second address. The first address, on two occasions, he referred to the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. The angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. People heard it. They had no idea what he was talking about. But, of course, he was talking about the Luciferian angel that is directing America today. Every Luciferian understood that. I'm not saying that George Bush understood what he was saying, but certainly the people who were writing his speech did, and the chief speechwriter at that time left the White House to go to work for as a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. And of course, in the second, certainly inaugural speech, why, President Bush referred to the New Order of the Ages when he said, you know, when our founders declared a New Order of the Ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. What is this ancient, what is this New Order of the Ages? It's, well, if you go to your search engine, type it in, it's Nova Ordo Seclorum, the emblem beneath the pyramid, capped by the all-seeing eye on the back of the dollar bill. Don't forget our all-day seminar on the 25th of October. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is 15 July 2010. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're caring about your world, caring about your garden. That's right. Today we're going to talk to Carolyn Harriott about keeping your garden going and feeding you all year round. This is a subject I love because we all want to eat. We all want to eat good food and we want to know how to keep our gardens going. So we're going to be talking to her in the second hour about keeping your garden going 12 months a year. Oh, and by the way, she lives in Canada. That's right. So if she lives in Canada and she can do it, then we can do it. I appreciate you joining us today. In the second hour, we're going to have Carolyn Harriott in the second hour. In the third hour, I'm going to read some of your emails from this week, some of your responses to some of the issues that we've had, and also take some phone calls, maybe some testimonies and some products. We'll wait and see how we feel at that point and how the program goes, because this is a listener-driven show. Of course, we want to provide you the information to work with, but this is a listener-driven show. We're here because of what you want to hear, what you want to know, not what I want to tell you. Well, maybe sometimes what I want to tell you. Let's talk about what we got in the news today. Missing Iranian scientist appears at the embassy in the United States. One little problem, he says he was kidnapped by the CIA. Stop cancer by eating fruit. Ooh, could it be? Could it be? And always take a small magnet with you when you travel. Do you know why? And we also need to talk about the question of the compass that we're getting. Several people have called and said their compasses are off lately. So if you have a compass in your home, I'd like for you to check out your compass, and later on we'll talk about this subject. Some people are saying it's not reading like it's supposed to. U.S. Marines training with the LAPD could be around the country. I think it probably is. Usually when they focus on one, it's because they're doing it everywhere. And when you haven't talked about Poland unveiling the new U.S. Patriot missile battery that Russia's not very happy about. So we need to talk about the fact that, okay, we got us in the sky at the space station with the Russians. We've got spies over here from Russia, our spies in Russia. We're trading spies, and now we put up a Patriot missile battery in Poland. Russia says, I don't like that idea. And what else is going on beneath the surface is the question. There's a judge that has permitted the first U.S. trial of a Guantanamo detainee. Well, we'll see about that one, but we'll talk about it. And how many people are still left in Guantanamo? Pentagon warns Congress the accounts are running dry. Went dry many years ago, but we've just been playing like we had money all along. The bank bill is ready for passage. We didn't even mention that there were another three or four banks that went under this past week. And I want to discuss the Apple iPhone, only because I'm not interested in it. I've had one. I sold it, gave it away, whatever. I didn't like it. Didn't want it. But I'll tell you what, this new Apple iPhone 4, we need to talk about how this thing got out on the market. And George Freund says, uh-oh,
we've got a nuclear plan for the Gulf. That's about the only thing that's going to take care of this problem. There's been another setback in the Gulf. The locking cap integrity did not work. We'll talk about it a little bit later. Obama panel warns governors debt will destroy us like a cancer. And new information on aspartame relative to premature births. We're going to have a ball today. We always do. At the Power Hour, we're going to learn something and let you know that you are cared about and you are valued. And we want every person to be a little bit better every day. We'll be back after this 3-minute break. Stay tuned. We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Afraid to answer it? Afraid to answer your door? Did you know that debt settlement, bankruptcy, and attorneys will cost you about 10 times more than you would legally be required to pay creditors? These are not ways to help you get out of debt. They are expensive payment plans. And if you're in debt already, does it make sense to load yourself up with another payment plan? Zero debt in 90 days gets you out of debt in 90 days, guaranteed. And that's the website you need to visit right now. ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Zero debt in 90 days gets you out of debt without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com is the quickest solution to debt relief on the planet. If you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt, student loans, or difficult mortgage situation, we can help, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com.
If you suffer from poor sleep, you've got to try MyPillow. Introducing the most revolutionary, most comfortable, and coolest pillow ever, MyPillow. Imagine your very own custom fit pillow. MyPillow is the only pillow of its kind on the market that uses a patented fill, custom made to your exact individual needs. MyPillow is 100% made in the USA and has a natural built-in cooling effect that keeps your cervical nerves cool, and that helps you get the best REM sleep possible. MyPillow helps alleviate snoring, migraine, sleep apnea, and other sleeping disorders. MyPillow is antimicrobial, non-allergenic, dust mite resistant, machine washable and dryable, comes in many sizes and will not go flat. And best of all, MyPillow comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what do you have to lose? Except poor sleep. Go to MyPillowShop.com. Mention coupon code GCN and receive up to $40 off. That's MyPillowShop.com. Or call 952-442-6199. That's 952-442-6199. MyPillow for the rest of your life.